right, the Mainland Podcast is back. We are in our off-season monthly schedule now, and I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Joining me tonight, as usual, Andrew Harrison and Daniel McGann. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic. The off-season so far, a lot of not Orlando City moves for the men's team so much, but Orlando moves. It's been exciting with the NWSL and all the other things, to travel down to Brazil, so it's been fun.
Yeah, it's been a nice off season for the fact that we've actually had some things to talk about. We've not just hit that wall of void of lack of soccer, which other teams have hit.
Right, we've been lucky because last year in the off season it was exciting for us because we're assembling an MLS team. And this year, you know, so far it's been eventful. We've got we'll get into it. Andrew actually went down to Rio de Janeiro. Lucky bastard that he is, and saw Orlando City play against Flamengo in the Americana, and historic building, 120th anniversary of the club. Orlando City goes on the road with a little bit of a depleted lineup, with guys on international duty and some guys still injured like Tally Hall, and played. They lost 1-0, but it was. You know, it was not unexpected to go to a foreign country and have, you know, a struggle against a club of the caliber of Flamengo, even though they're 11th in the table. Brazilian Serie A is still, you know, a strong league. And, you know, Orlando City had their opportunities. In fact, should have been on a 1-0 lead. We had a penalty earned by Adrian Venter, and who really hustled his tail off in the early going of that game. I thought he was really strong in the first 20 or 25 minutes of the game, and Brian Rochez with a poor effort on the penalty kick and easily saved, and then late a free kick goal against. So, you know, not bad going down to Brazil against a top flight Brazilian club and not allowing a goal in the run of play. Probably speaks pretty well for, you know, the way that the team played in the friendly. In fact, you know, the Brazilian league's still going on right now. So they're in season, and Orlando's been off for a while. So I'd say overall, Andrew, a 1-0 loss in those circumstances is probably not a terrible result.
No, I think it was a nice result for us, the fact that we were about 3 weeks out from not really having played a game. We had a long trip down there, basically the longest we'd faced all season. To go in playing at a team that was at home mid-season, okay, they're having some struggles, but we actually we gave a good account of ourselves. We went down there with a lot of firsts in our mind and trying to be a flagship team for what is trying to grow in soccer in the United States, and I think we did a good performance. Would I have liked to have seen a win? Certainly, but I think that we have to be proud with what we've done, and it really kind of cements where we've come as a franchise in the last 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, and it's hard to take a business trip approach when you got a young team like Orlando City does, and, you know, all of a sudden they're let loose on the beaches of Rio, Daniel. You know, how much do you think the extracurricular and the trip itself sort of takes center stage and takes some focus away from the match?
In the off season, I think it takes predominantly the center stage, right? I mean, how many of these players had the chance to play in Brazil at in the Maracanã, one of the most storied stadiums in the world, against a very storied club as well? I mean, this is kind of the Brazilian trip we put off a few times. If you remember, we had a Brazilian trip planned before the inaugural season and didn't work out. And I'm pretty sure it got the players' hopes up at that time, and now they finally got to go down there and play in a stadium like this. And albeit it wasn't a huge crowd, 12, 13,000 people, you're still in Rio playing in the Maracanã against a storied club. I could see a few players being starry-eyed and probably having long nights either before or after. And I wouldn't really chalk too much into the game outside of Roquez missing that flub of a penalty kick. I mean, I don't even feel like he put anything behind it. But, you know, you can't hope for a 1-0. That wasn't bad. It was a good showing to the point they went down there and they held their own a little bit and had the opportunity to put something in the back of the net.
Yeah, kind of a fluke goal that they allowed, because it came off of Darwin Serrin changed directions, and Orlando City's trialist goalkeeper, Thierry Graca, was unable to do anything about that goal. And, you know, for the most part, the team did its job defensively. Just a bad bounce cost them, you know, at least a draw as a result. So, but I'm interested, Andrew, you went down there. I'm really interested to hear about your trip, about what the atmosphere was like, about what the stadium was like, about what you experienced as a reporter for us, for the mainland, covering the match.
It was just such an eye-opening experience. First of all, the stadium is so... it's just magical, like, to be there. It was such a large stadium. You know, it holds 70,000. It's in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and it's just got so much history. I mean, they had like a museum tour and things that I kind of got to take part in. And they've got, you know, they have the ball that Pelé scored his 1,000th goal with. They have a set of stairs that the Pope stood on, and just like certain things. And also, for the World Cup last year, they had the mascot, as well as the Maracanã hosted 6 games. And for each game, it gets a little replica World Cup trophy with the game that it hosted at that time. One thing that I really took away from it is, though, I'm very excited about Orlando City putting a roof on its stadium. There may have only been a small crowd there, but you could really hear them during any moment of going forward or just any sort of positive play. It sounded like it was almost full, even when there's such a small crowd. And I think it was a really interesting experience from the fact that these lads got to go down there and play against those some people. You know, we talk about a starry-eyed approach to it, but it's also part and parcel of doing it. We want to play more of these types of games. We want to get to the CONCACAF Champions League. We want to be playing in these kinds of stadiums. And this is where this starts to come in. It was a very positive experience. It would definitely make me want to go on more road trips from the mainland and to get that approach and see what's coming up around as well.
Now, one thing I'm interested in, Andrew, is sort of the experience you had as a writer for us. Like, I know there's a little bit of a language barrier that might have come into play. How did you get around that? Did they give you a good press meal? I want to know all the little details.
Well, there was no... The press contingent was, there was no refreshments, no meal. the language barrier in Rio is nobody speaks English whatsoever. I had also left my power cable at the hotel, so I had to point and gesticulate to a nearby reporter if I could borrow his power cable, so I could charge my computer for a little while. It was very much bare bones. It was, here's a desk, here's a power to plug in, there's a field, some people will run around on it in a few minutes. And it was very not what you would expect in the United States. And the language barrier was tough, for especially getting my credentials and just that whole experience. But once I was there, and they had great facilities in terms of Wi-Fi and things like that, but it was a nice place to cover a game. But the press meal and refreshments and all that kind of stuff, nothing. It was, you're here to do something, we're going to let you do it, we're not going to bother you, and then you're going to leave.
Yeah. Who was there from Orlando City? Did you have a guy from the Orlando City staff helping you, or you know, making sure that you were taken care of in terms of like getting to talk to Adrian Heath and stuff after the game?
Yeah. So when we went downstairs, basically all the 4 guys for Orlando City that were there on the trip sat in front of me, and I spoke to Lenny mostly, and he was just kind of telling me where stuff was going to be next and what we were going to be doing, because there was so many media rooms that were down there. Where we were actually going to be, and we ended up doing it in the tunnel, so there was a lot of space, and they had basically both boards side by side for Flamengo and for Adrian Heath mostly, and it was just it was a very great experience. But Orlando City was really positive and really helpful, and I do thank them a lot for giving me the opportunity and helping me get credentials for it too.
Before we get into our man of the match, Andrew, I wanted to ask also, were you the only United States media there covering the Orlando City game?
I was, yes. I managed to catch a list of the list when I was first signing in. I was the only person down there. There was nobody else, and I think the one thing that the club really struggled with was trying to get the Brazilian media to take an interest in the non-English language, you know, and in people who only spoke English. Like, mm-hmm. It was very much a bit of a roundup where they had to try to get people to encourage the, you know, for Heath and things like that. Like, the crowd that was on the Flamengo players was a lot bigger than the ones that were with Heath's press conference and just everything else in the same situation. Like, when I went to training, they were interviewing Flavio and the Carnero, and they, you know, they were really interested in those people, but when it came down to mm-hmm. it was a lot more restrained when it came to really what we consider the power players, like Heath and some of the players that are really integral to what we like as fans, as mm-hmm. as bloggers.
Right. Well, I'm sure one of the issues was no Kaká. He's off on international duty, and it's too bad, because the timing of the event would have been great if World Cup qualifying and stuff like that wasn't going on. But the Brazilian national team has been in action, and we wouldn't probably have suspected during the season that Kaká would get the call up for, meaningful World Cup qualifiers. But, there he was. And so he wasn't able to take part. I'm sure there would have been a lot more interest in the game and a lot more probably fans in the seats.
Oh, yeah.
But I can tell you, it didn't look great on TV. But I think they predominantly seated one side of the stadium, which happened to be the angle that the camera was pointing from, is my impression, because there were a couple of alternate like shots from time to time of the stands, and they were showing what they were showing looked like a lot more than what we were seeing, from the camera angle during the game. So my suspicion is that they were showing it from the angle where all the people were already sitting below the camera. So, a 1-0 loss, but it's, we got some bonus soccer in the off season. A lot of teams are done, but Orlando City continue to get on the field and give us some moments to cheer about. And, so let's get into our man of the match. Daniel, we're going to start with you. And, obviously it wasn't a great performance, and a lot of people only played, sparingly. But what did you think? Who was your man of the match for Orlando City?
Hard to choose one whenever we've already talked about them looking a little out of it. But I thought both Adrian Winter played well, and Darwin Serén, outside of his mistake in the defensive half that basically led to the goal, I thought Serén showed that he can play on, just about any level that you put him. Mm-hmm. And I'd go with Serén there. He was... he made some good runs at the Flamengo defenders. He had some good passes. That nice 1-2 that he played was really, really good. That Rivas, I thought, was going to slot that one away. But I just thought for the sake of looking like he could play on another level, Darwin looked like he could.
All right. Andrew, what was your who was your man of the match?
Once again, I gotta kind of repeat Daniel. It was hard to see, because I think we didn't play with it as much passion as we would like to have seen. I thought Winter did play really well. He looked like a player that was once again trying to fight for where he wants to be next season. I would potentially say I thought Seb Hines had a good game for me. He was basically one of the only players that played the full 90 minutes. I thought he played well playing between two partners. And so I'd probably go with him. I mean, we didn't concede off an open goal. He had a good position, and he'd probably be my man of the match.
Yeah, I agree, and he's the guy I had in mind all along. Seb Hines, I thought, played really well. I thought that the back line prevented a lot of good opportunities mm-hmm. and good looks. There were only one or two really good looks in open play. And Seb had to play with two different partners, with Colin in the first half and Mateos. So to be able to do that, I thought he played really well. Now he was involved in the foul that led to the free kick. But that was a midfield breakdown that you know, he basically had no choice.
It was a stop. Coverage. Like they both were trying to cover and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, you have to stop the guy running at your goal who's just been given a free run by the midfielder who coughed up the ball. And it's actually, I'm interested in Daniel's answer, because I thought, aside from the back heel pass from Sarah, and I thought he had a tough game. I thought he had a lot of giveaways. I thought there was an opportunity to fire one on goal, and he took an extra touch and had it taken away. And I thought he made a lot of mistakes that you wouldn't normally see from Darwin Sarin.
Well, I have to talk that to look like the players around him in the midfield, outside of Venter in the first 20 minutes, they looked like they were a little sluggish. And Sarin looked like he was trying to do a little too much, because everything was running through him anyway, so those mistakes were going to happen because the movement wasn't necessarily there around him. That's why we saw that disconnect. But I saw the same thing from Sarin that I always see, which is 110%. And outside of that, I mean, I wasn't going to choose a defender, because we're going down to Brazil not to just set up camp. You know, I was hoping to see a little bit more, and the only player outside of Venter who I said had a good, you know, like everyone else said, he had a good first half of the first half. But Sam was the only person that looked like he wanted to do something, and he got caught at times a few times because I think he was trying to do too much. But still, he was the only player that looked like he wanted to move the ball forward.
I don't know. I thought Aguido looked like he moved the ball forward a few times. Rivas looked good until he got tired. I thought he wore out. He actually got some shots on target. He had one early that he forced a diving save from pretty far away. I thought he had another shot. Unfortunately, it was right at the net. And he had one thing that was uncharacteristically sloppy from Rivas is that his crossing was poor. He had one cross that wanged clear into the stands. He was trying to get into the box, and the thing just almost took off straight on him. You know, what's good is that when you see Carlos Rivas start to get shots on net, that's an improvement. And, you know, because he's got the big leg, and if he starts getting those things on target, he's going to start scoring more goals. It's just a matter of time. So it was nice to see him get the ball on frame a few times.
He doesn't have that issue from a free kick, though, huh? I mean, he puts those on frame just about every time. It's just sometimes it looks like he's just moving too fast for himself when he's trying to take those shots. I do have a question. Have you guys noticed that Rivas, it looks like, I mean, I know when players get tired, they get a bit sloppy, but when Rivas gets tired, it seems like he gets extremely sloppy with the ball. Is that something that I've seen myself, or is that something that everyone else is noticing?
I think all the players, not just Rivas, I think all the players kind of, you know, they get I saw it yesterday in the U.S. men's national team game where, you know, Jozy Altidore in the second half, every touch he had was like his foot was made of granite. I mean, everything was just flying off his foot, and he couldn't control anything. In times where he'd get the ball with his back to goal, a man on him, sure, but something he should be able to settle and at least get, you know, bring someone else into the play, and he was just having a lot of trouble. I just think that's a common thing, and the more tired you get, obviously, the worse it is, because you can't control your muscles with your mind when your mind gets tired. So
I don't know. Rivas, I see. I mean, I know he has a big touch at times, but it seems like when he gets tired, he gets his mind just leaves the game. His focus is no longer there. It's not so much that he has heavy touches and his passes get bad. It's just like he loses focus when he gets tired. And I've noticed that from him this year. I didn't know if I was the only one that saw that specifically from the single player, where I know everyone gets tired and they lose their touch. And
I think it's worse in younger players, and he's a younger player, so
yeah.
That's probably, you know, explains it. I you see the same thing from a Harrison Heath when he gets tired in the second half. You know, it's just that you build up that stamina over time when you get a little older. Rivas, there's no doubt Rivas needs to put a little bit more muscle on his frame. He's a slight guy and a thin guy, and I think that he's in a lot of ways he's like Kevin Molino was at the beginning of the season. I think he's got some room to put a little bit of muscle on that frame, and you know, he'll learn to become a professional and to be able to conserve a little bit more in the early going so that he has more in the tank at the end. I think that's probably not going to be an issue. So 1-0, Flamengo defeats Orlando City in the club's first international friendly on foreign soil. But, you know, big opportunity and big honor for, the, you know, Orlando City to go down there and be part of that 120th anniversary celebration for Flamengo. Let's turn our attention, guys, toward the Orlando Pride. Since we last spoke, the Orlando Pride gained 9 new players through the NWSL expansion draft. And I'm going to start with Daniel because I know Daniel did his mock draft. And I wanted to just get your thoughts overall on how the Pride performed in the expansion draft.
Well, you know, my mock draft had the first two right, and then basically from there on out, it looked like it just went all to blank in a handbasket. I mean, I was looking for Katrina Gorey. I really thought the connection there with Tom, because he had coached Australia, he brought her into the program. I thought that was going to be there, but then again, there were a lot of backhand deals, especially with Kansas City. With the Sarah Hagen deal, we don't know if they basically said, hey, protect all of our players. When it comes down to it, that could have been something that did happen because we didn't take a Kansas City player at all. And that could have been something there because I really thought Katrina Gorey was the type of player to play underneath Hagen and Morgan and would be that ideal attacking midfielder. But then again, we went and got, you know, Leanne Sanderson, who's basically the same exact thing. A much bigger player. Gorey, I think, is 4'10". And Sanderson's not going to be away in the Olympics this year, which is also good. And she plays that attacking midfield role, and she is dynamic, is best for England. She puts the ball on the back of the net. She makes beautiful passes. She makes the good runs, and she's very competitive. So when Morgan leaves, which, you know, we all expect to happen, you know, we'll still have some attacking firepower in that the attacking third. And then the rest of the players, there were a few that I actually had in my mock draft that I talked about, Taryn Hemmings being one of them. Where I actually talked about her going, her or Rachel Kwan going fourth. I said it was going to be between those two. We actually took Taryn Hemmings. She can play outside back. She can play center back. It looks like she's slotted in at center back for us right now. And she just, you know, she's got the veteran moxie. She's got the ability to play different positions upon the back line. And she's just, you know, she's a good player, a very good player. Somebody who can, you know, give you a stalwart defensive front. And then you look at the other players. Tony Presley's probably coming back to Orlando. That's the thing. And let's not forget getting Ashlyn Harris. I mean, Ashlyn Harris, of course, is the big signing. Everyone knew that was coming. It wasn't a secret, but getting a player of that caliber as a goalkeeper, and then getting the player at the caliber of Leanne Sanderson in the midfield, you have Kaylin Cowell and you have Alice Warren and Sarah Hagen up front. That spine looks very, very strong right now. And then you're adding the players of like Maddie Evans, who can play outside back, who can play midfield. You have upside and Jasmine Spencer and Jamia Fields, who can play kind of wing attacking roles. And forward as well. So it looks like they did a really good job building it out.
Yeah, the surprise to me was two Western New York Flash players coming to Orlando. I think that was a little bit surprising to me. Leanne Sanderson, we had heard rumors about that, the Portland Thorns. And, you know, what's interesting about Leanne Sanderson, right now she's on loan in the Cyprus League. And they're early in their season. She has 4 goals in the first – I think she's only played in 2 of the 4 games. And she has 4 goals, so there's a lot of lopsided games, though, in that particular league. I was looking at scores the other day, 14-0, 11-0, some of those games. But it's great that Orlando City is serious about, you know, bringing in players that can, you know, put the ball in the net. Obviously, we know that Alex Morgan and Sarah Hagen can. And, you know, having somebody like Leanne Sanderson in attacking midfield is going to open up space for them. And it's maybe, you know, potentially what could bring Alex Morgan back to her best form that she's ever had. Andrew, what are your overall thoughts on the roster so far? And, you know, were there any surprises to you?
I don't think there was too many surprises. I'm very excited, though, that we've gone and got some young forward talent. I still do think, though, that out of everything that we got in the draft, I still think there's actually more surprises to come. I think that once again, just like we did with the men's team, there will be some moves. We just don't yet have them in place. We've got some great assets in Spencer and Fields that are capable of being traded away, but also being developed for maybe future moves, you know, 12 months from now, or good loan prospects. Because once again, I don't think that Orlando will just stay here. They will look for a partner in the women's game. Maybe it'll be in Australia or something. You potentially think that with Samani being the coach. I think this was a good, solid draft to allow a call. And when we, you know, this week there was potential discussion that, you know, Major League Soccer and the men's is thinking about doing away with the expansion draft. I think what we really saw as a highlight is that there is actually such a wealth of talent in the women's game that the expansion draft is still very beneficial, because it gave Orlando City a great core to move forward and be competitive in the first year and not have to worry about contraction in the NWSL.
I'm a little bit torn on the whole issue about expansion drafts. I always kind of like the fact that, you know, teams can come in and they can start by stocking their roster with some depth players or some experienced players. What makes it easy to poo-poo the draft is that, you know, these they don't really give you a lot. I mean, it's like dumpster diving in MLS. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, here's our garbage you can pick from it. Because there's not a ton of depth in the league. I don't think there's any team that's, like, terribly deep. So you end up with these players like, you know, we ended up with guys like that on our roster. I'm not going to call them out, but you know who they are.
Oh, we know who they are.
We'll call those out later.
Yeah, they didn't really contribute. So, you know, if you just let teams just protect one fewer guy, that's going to immediately make a bigger impact on an expansion draft. I've heard people say, well, they should just up the allocation money and say that the players, they have to make trades for players. They have to use X amount of their allocation money and international slots and make them trade for it. That's the same thing, basically. Instead of just upping the money, just give them a few more extra guys they can pick from.
Well, let's not forget the state of each league is totally different, too. I mean, the NWSL is the predominant, you know, is the best women's league, or arguably the best women's league in the world, having some of the best players in. Some of the best players want to come play here. The MLS is not necessarily that, and it has more clubs as well. I mean, you can't then say, hey, let's let these teams that don't have as much depth, they need to allow one more player to be taken in the expansion draft or be available in the expansion draft. I would rather them be bringing outside talent in to the MLS and driving those new teams to do that, rather than them just plucking them from the teams within. So I'm a proponent for, you know, giving expansion teams the opportunity with more allocation money to bring in outside talent, because that's only going to make the league stronger. Just watering it down by allowing other teams that don't necessarily have depth to give up a player who's a fringe player in the first place doesn't really do too much for the growth of MLS.
Well, I also think that teams that have been expansion teams within the last, say, 3 to 4 years probably should be exempt from having anyone plucked from their roster, because they're just now getting to the depth level that everyone else is at. They're not really – they haven't really had a chance to get established. They're still kind of building that up. So, I don't know. There's no real right or wrong answer. We'll see what MLS does, and, you know, quite frankly, we'll end up really ripping them for it at some point. Because sometimes their rules just don't make a whole lot of sense, or at least are not obvious.
I did want to point out another thing about the Pride, in case we were going to go to a different subject, but they haven't really used their international slots yet. They still have those available, and you're talking about the connection with Flavio here, and this trying to be a complete club atmosphere. Let's take a look at them bringing in some big-name Brazilians, because we know how much Orlando loves Brazilians here. I mean, and there's a couple out there that, you know, will fill midfield roles that we definitely need. So I'm not going to start throwing names out there for you know, Brazilian women that are marketable not only here but in Brazil as well. But there's definitely some big names out there that...
Like, we know you mean Marta. We know you mean Marta. Come on. You're not fooling anybody. You can name names here. All right, before we get out of here in our November edition here of the Mainland Podcast, we want to talk a little bit about the Orlando City roster. And we're going to play a little game called Stays or Goes. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw a name out there. I'm going to each of you to just tell me, do you think he'll be on the club in 2016, or do you think he'll be elsewhere? I'm just going to go alphabetically here, and the first one's pretty obvious because he wasn't on the roster in the friendly. Corey Ash,
long gone.
Yeah,
gone.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they were going to bring him back, I think he would have been in the lineup, and I just think that
he was too high. His cap number was too high.
He does. He makes good money. I thought he was a very useful player, but in the end, you know, he had some injuries that kind of slowed him, and I think that maybe he just didn't quite trust him in some situations that maybe he should have. So I think that kind of stunted his development of the team, maybe.
I think Bowden showing that he can play at this level also, and then you have to look at Ramos on the other side, Breck Shea coming back. Rebus, I mean, just the whole picture, right? Ash is kind of that outside guy looking in, and if he wants to be cheaper, then that's his decision. But I don't think he's going to take less money, and he's going to be going elsewhere.
All right, so here's a guy who did play on the weekend, and he was with the club for 1 year loan. But my understanding is the club had the opportunity to extend that loan. Eric Avila.
My silence is a go. He's gone.
I think he stays.
Don't sound so disappointed, Dan.
I think he stays. I saw them in training. I think he's developed a very close relationship with a bunch of people. His number is pretty low.
He can play a lot of positions.
He's got a good scrappy attitude, and I think that he stays.
You know, in defense of him, his right midfield role, he's not a right midfielder. And I think he showed that continuously throughout the year. I don't mind him staying to play specific positions, but I don't know what positions those are because everyone that I saw him play, it didn't look like he was on the field. And, I mean, you know there's a cheap player out there, but I'd much rather give a different guy a shot that's a cheap player than just hoard a guy on our bench just because he's cheap. I mean, if he's not going to add anything, which I didn't feel like, I really honestly don't feel like he added much outside of just having a body, then there's other bodies out there.
All right, here's a guy who's out on loan. Adam Bedell, he's a striker, big, tall dude. Does he come back and do they find a place for him on the MLS squad, or do they try to sell him up in Scandinavia?
I think he's going to be sold. I mean, he's doing pretty well out there right now, so... he's got some minutes in already. He scored a couple goals. I can see him being sold.
I agree. I think that this was a great move by McDonough. I think he saw what he needed to do, and he knows he's going to get some good return on his investment for the trade.
All right, here's a guy who we probably all think will be back, but does he come back as a starter? Luke Bowden.
Yeah, I think Bowden's definitely back. I mean, he's earned his place in Orlando City for MLS, and a lot of fans love him. I think he's shown the ability to play along the left side. I mean, I still can't believe that goal that he scored where he looked like he was like, am I supposed to shoot? I'm not quite sure. And then he paused for a second and finally took a shot. But he's enamored with the club, and I think a lot of fans like him. I'll be happy to see him back.
I think so too. I've always liked him. I think he's got what Heath looks for in a player, and I thought we saw some great play from this season in MLS. And I think he'll grow, and he's part of this club at a core level.
All right, here's a guy who many people might not realize he's still on the team. Tony Cascio,
gone.
Well, how's his back? I mean, is he practicing? Not practicing? Travel with the club, Andrew. Was he down in Brazil?
He was not. I don't see him being there. I think he might be ultimately one of those players that you might see retire in the next year or two, probably through injury, because I don't think he's ever really managed to recover.
Yeah, and I want to say that's unfortunate, too, because I was excited for him at the beginning of the year with the speed that he could bring on the left side, and he showed well with Houston 2 years back now, but I think he's gone. But if he does retire, look for maybe OCB or something like that to pick him up as some kind of coach, because he has built some relationships here, if that's how he's going to move. If he's going to stay as a player in MLS, I don't think it's going to be with Orlando.
Yeah, I think we were going to see some more of him. I thought we were going to see more of him after the Louisville friendly when he played, when he finally got back in the lineup. But after that, just saw him at training, and he looked really good.
Yeah.
He was usually used out on the wing, sending in crosses, you know, at the portion of training that we got to see. But unfortunately, we never got to really see what Tony could do. He was a guy we were kind of excited about after the expansion draft, and especially after we saw media day and saw him out there with the guys and how he looked. No, he's probably gone. I think we can all agree on this one, Darwin Serrin.
Oh, that's not a question for me. He's here. He was my player for Orlando this year. If I had to choose one who had a breakout year, it would definitely be him, because at the beginning of the year, we weren't even quite sure if he was starter material after Orlando's move to MLS, and he's shown well at the MLS level. He's definitely here to stay.
I totally agree. I think he's one of those players that we're building an engine room around, and it will be a toss-up whether or not him or Higuita moves on first, but I think that he definitely stays.
All right, here's a guy who is part of the spine of the team, Aurelien Collin. Does Orlando City, you know, move him, or do they keep him in 2016? Is he a long-term guy? Is he somebody they maybe could give a younger guys a shot with Hines and Mateos developing, and maybe move his salary? Or what do you guys think?
He stays for one more year.
I think it's a 50-50, and it's whether or not a Chicago or a Toronto comes in, offers him big money with the ability to really recoup enough for the front office to be able to go out and make some roster moves that they want.
Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who I think we probably all agree, but he probably will be in Brevard County, Connor Donovan.
Yeah, he stays. OCB definitely, but he's going to be here.
And he's on a GA contract, so that's a no-brainer. They're not paying anything for him. He's got the ability to grow. He's going to need some time because knee injury that he has is going to take some time, but OCB is definitely going to be his place.
Earl Edwards Jr.
I think he's still going to be here too, and look for OCB again. I think he showed well a few times. It depends on what we do with the goalkeeper position. I don't know if they're comfortable with Earl there as a starter, or Josh for that matter, but look for OCB for one of those two.
I think if you'd asked me this question a week ago, I would have said no doubt does he stay. Now with Thierry Graca being part of the club and some, you know, front office moves, I think you might see him leave, and I don't think he goes to OCB if he does.
I have a feeling that they're going to move him and keep the trialist too. I think that's going to happen. I think Paul Tenorio wrote about it as a possibility, and I think that I would love to see Earl Edwards develop and see what he could do in MLS in a few years, because I think he's a terrific goalkeeper, a terrific young goalkeeper, very good on penalties, as we found out this year. Stopped one against Ponte Preta, stopped three against Charleston. So good season for Earl, a really personable kid, really like him. But I think there's a chance they move him and, maybe try to get something for him and then bring in the trialist. And a lot of this, I think, has to do with what is going on with Tally Hall, like how long term his injury is. So, we'll have to keep an eye on that. Speaking of goalkeepers, you know him, you love him. He played a game in 10 minutes, Josh Ford.
Greatest game in 10 minutes ever. I mean, Josh Ford, come on. Both of these guys, Earl and Josh, have played it. They've been loaned out to either Orange County Blues for Josh or Earl's played at the Fusion. So I can see somebody going to OCB and the other guy's gone. I would rather keep Earl myself because I think he's just got more upside. But Josh Ford has a little bit more history to him. So it really depends. I'm going to say Josh is gone now.
I think he is a serial journeyman, and he is going to continue his journey elsewhere.
Yeah, I think he's gone. Maybe with an NASL team next year where he can start and you know, maybe try to work his way back to MLS. I think this is all dependent on, well, a little bit money might come into play, but I think a little bit has to do with health. Tally Hall.
Wow. I don't really want to say gone, but I think the money's going to come into play. And even though how great he was this year for us, I think he's gone just from the money side of it. If this trial is sticks, and we could probably bring in another goalkeeper for much less.
I kind of have to agree. I think it's by, you know, we saw him go down with a non-contact injury. It's something that the club has to be seriously considering about moving, freeing up some money on the roster. I don't want to say gone either, because I think he'd be a nice solid another year while we're still growing and getting stuff into place. But I think he might have to go if the money just doesn't work and with what we try to do.
Yeah.
I would have said that he's going to be our keeper for the next 5 years, but these injuries are certainly concerning. I would say I'm going to say he's back next year, and I'm going to say that the club hedges its bets and brings in somebody who, and maybe Graca's that guy, who they think, you know, let's bring in somebody that if Tally can't go is going to be our next guy, and maybe it's another young keeper around the league. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if a trade is made in the offseason. Let's go with homegrown player Harrison Heath.
He's back. He's back. He's at OCB, and he's back.
Yep, totally agree. I don't think he goes anywhere. I thought he looked like he's recovered from his knee injury. He looks like he's ready to go. I think he's another one of those players that could do with a little bit more weight on him just to make him a little bit stronger for the position he wants to play, but he definitely returns to OCB.
Yep, 19 years old, 5'11", only 160. So he's got to put on some muscle, and he will be able to do that as he gets a little older and it's another year in the weight program, MLS weight program, and I think the people in Melbourne should take good care of H for us.
Yep.
Christian Higuita.
Wow. He's definitely back unless somebody sweeps in to pull him from underneath us, because he's got all the talent in the world. And I think he's probably got another year, Saren a bit longer, but one of those two guys that you definitely see maybe go in the off season this year. Hopefully not. But again, if somebody comes in with a big offer, then he's gone. Outside of that, he's back in the club.
I totally agree. I think if somebody comes in with a big bid, he's gone, because I think the club knows that he could move to that next level. If we are lucky enough to keep him for another year, he stays. Mm-hmm. He's solid, and we probably get more money from the year after.
I say stay. He starts the season in Orlando City, and he's here at least until the summer transfer window. And after that, we'll see. If he has a good first half of the season, I expect somebody will throw some money at him in the summer window. Somebody is one of the European clubs who is, you know, gearing up for their season. Other than that, if he doesn't have a great first half of the season, I think he's here all year. Let's go on defense to Seb Hines.
He's going to be here. I think Seb is going to be here to stay, and I can see him being in that back line for a little while.
He stays. He doesn't take up an international spot. He's pretty low on the cap space, and he's had a solid season, and he's not really put much of a foot wrong, and he can play with both partners depending on whether or not Colin or Mateos ships out.
Yeah,
I like Seb. I think Seb comes back, and I'm not sure if he starts, but I think he rotates regularly if he doesn't start. So I think Seb Hines is back. The captain. So pretty sure we all agree about this guy.
Yeah, we don't have to say anything, right?
Yeah, he's back. Unless... No, he's back.
Kaká, welcome back, buddy. Here's a guy who we're probably all in agreement is going to spend some time in Brevard County, Estrella.
Yeah, Estrella definitely going to be in OCB, and hopefully he can grow a little bit there, and both him and Heath playing that that role in the 4-2-3-1. You can see them starting a lot of games over there in Brevard.
I actually think he is. This is actually a divisive one for me. I think he's actually gone out of the club because I don't think Heath rates him as a player. And this is going to be whether or not who really controls OCB and whether or not it's the development for the main club or whether or not it's development for selling talent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fair enough. I think Estrella has certainly not shown me much this year. I think that even in the friendly, where a lot of people suddenly thought he should be getting more playing time, I thought the friendly against West Brom was a lot of sideways and backward passing for my money. And you know, I don't know where the love came from other than the fact that Orlando City won the game, and so they thought, oh, yeah, we should give him more playing time. Let's go with Rookie of the Year, Kyle Larin.
He's back, and he's going to – I don't think there's going to be a big enough offer this year for him, and I don't think the club would take it necessarily either. And he's going to be back scoring goals for Orlando next year.
He's most certainly back, but don't – be surprised if the club doesn't go out to pick up another big name to support him, and also just in case that he has a second year slump.
Yeah, and not only in case he has a second year slump, but in case he does it again and the big teams come calling in the summer window.
Yeah.
I think he's back. He's certainly somebody that the club would like to hang on to another year or two if they can get that out of him. Because his value should continue to go up if he continues to score goals.
Yeah.
Summer signing, David Mateos.
I think he's back. I think that Colin, him, and Hines are going to be the three in the back. Donovan's going to be at OCB, and I think they will be rotating regularly in that center defender role.
I think he's back too. His number is high, but I think that they've liked how quickly he settled in, and he does have a great partnership with both of them, so I think he comes back.
Yeah, only played six games, but boy, he really settled into MLS quickly. I thought after his third game he was as solid as anybody we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like Mateos, and I think they brought him in at the price they did because they had long-term plans for him. That was the feeling I got when I talked to Paul McDonough. And I want to say that, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Connor Donovan. I think one thing I didn't mention is I think he'll be in the lineup for the senior club a bit as a backup in case they need him. But I think he'll end up then driving over to Melbourne to play the next day in a lot of cases because he won't be getting on the field. But I think he's a solid enough prospect. He'll be a backup, I think, on the senior team.
Yeah.
Let's go with a guy we barely got to see him play this year, Kevin Molino.
He's back, and he's going to be starting and hopefully showing the fans why we didn't really go out and get a big-name player for that right midfield and right wing position is because we knew Molino was going to be back.
I totally agree. Molino is most definitely back, and I can't wait to see his growth with Kaká hopefully go full strength this season.
Yeah,
and with more time in the weight room, so I think we're all in agreement Molino mania exists. I think we're all in agreement on this next guy, Danny Mwanga.
He's definitely gone. He didn't show much this year, and it's a little upsetting because a few years back Danny Mwanga was an up-and-comer, but he hasn't shown anything over the past few years. And in the expansion draft, a lot of people questioned why we took him, and a lot of people are still questioning that right now.
Yeah, I'm going to just say who. yeah, there's no way.
He goes. Lewis Neal, guys. Lewis Neal.
Oh, my gosh. I say he retires and gets a job with the club.
I say he stays and he plays one more year and then he retires and moves to OCB as a coach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we're probably going to be stuck with Lewis for another year. Daniel, I'm sorry. He's a tremendous guy, and he's a great team guy, and Heath loves him and trusts him with his life. So I think he's back. And You know, maybe those sitters will go in next year.
Well, you know, if he's back, it's okay if he's back and he's on the bench. That's perfectly fine. And Andrew, we don't need to hear again that we were winning when he was in the lineup. We've already heard that.
Yeah, because we were also losing when he was in the lineup. Because he was in the lineup a lot. I think we'll all agree on Rafa Ramos.
Oh, he's definitely back. And I think he needs another 2 years of growth and maturity is the big thing with him, but then some big clubs may be calling.
I think he's back. I think if he has a good season, though, somebody comes in and tries to take him midseason.
Okay. I think he's back for the whole year and possibly even a whole nother year after that. I think he's got a lot of upside, but I think he's got a long way to go. And for a guy his size, he really needs to perform well at this level before somebody will take him to the next level.
Yeah.
So that's my thought on it. Here's a guy I think we'll all agree that is going to be a nice stalwart for Orlando City B, Tommy Redding.
Definitely. He's going to see a lot of minutes in OCB next year. And he's got as much potential as anyone. It's really good to have both him and Connor Donovan. They're going to play a lot of games for OCB next year, and you couldn't ask for anything better.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. I think that's actually us developing our partnership for 3 years down the road if we can keep everybody together and healthy and happy.
At 18 years old, he did not look overmatched by MLS competition. I like Tommy Redding, but a year in the USL playing day in and day out, I think is going to do him wonders.
Yep.
Here's a guy that I know what Daniel's answer is going to be, but I'm going to disagree with him. Pedro Ribeiro.
Oh, man, he is, please, gone. Listen, the only thing that he can do, if he goes and trains with some cheetahs for the next 6 months, he might be able to stay, but I can't see us, he's only going to get slower, guys. He's not going to get any faster. It's not going to happen, and I can't see us having a guy that plays in a six by six box on a field, and that's what he is.
I think he stays.
Oh, gosh.
I think he is the... He's unfortunately such a utility player for the Kaká or the Larin that I think he just stays. He's low enough on cost that they keep him around.
Yeah, cheap, good team guy, good attitude. Can play multiple positions, could even play center back if need be. I think he stays. Provide some depth. Okay, guys, that's so Rivas. Carlos.
He's definitely back. And for all the saying whenever both him and Aguito were coming here and Rivas was the big signing, it looks like Aguito is that big signing, but Rivas did show his ability, and he's going to be back playing down that left-hand side for Orlando for a little while.
I think he's back too, but I think that if he doesn't catch fire and score a goal in the first 2 months, he spends some time in OCB.
Mm.
Wow.
Okay. Here, speaking of OCB, there's a potential landing spot for Sidney Rivera.
I don't know. I don't quite know about that. The team they held on to him even though he was at Louisville, right, for a little while, and he's still around now. I'll say OCB with the caveat that I think we'll probably look for players with a little bit more potential for that OCB team, because I do think it's going to be an actual farm team. It's not going to be a sell team. And I think he stays for now unless we get someone else through the draft that has more potential.
I say gone completely.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're going to cut him. There's a chance they might cut him from the senior club and re-sign him to a minor league deal, because they do need a few guys who are on USL contracts. But I just think we've seen enough of him. Anywhere they've sent him, he hadn't been able to get in the lineup, so that's kind of telling.
That is telling.
I think we'll all be in agreement about Brian Rochez.
He's here. He's staying, and he's going to be I would not be surprised to see him start more games next year than Kyle Larin.
I think he stays and he develops into a almost Kyle Larin style player with the ability to score those goals needed in the big minutes.
I want to caveat that, guys, not because I think he's better than Kyle Larin, but I think Kyle Larin might see a lot of international duty next year.
Yeah.
So I have to caveat that with the reason why Roquez might start a few more matches than Larin next year.
I see Roquez staying as well. I see him being the super sub in about the 70th minute and a second guy for when the team is behind and needs a goal to come on and play with Larin, and also a guy who can spot start for Larin. I see this as a big year for Brian Roquez. I think we're all in agreement because of reasons. Servando Carrasco will be back.
Reasons. Best way to explain it, yes. And yes. He'll be back and he'll be playing. He might be playing for two clubs, actually. I don't think he's the OCB type of player. No. I do think you could probably see it once or twice next year happen. Does he have the ability to go down and come back up? What is that all? What's that?
My understanding is anyone on the team's roster, not on a USL contract, can go back and forth.
Okay.
So if they're on an MLS contract, they can go back and forth. They cannot do that with a USL guy. That's my understanding.
Yeah, that's it.
So, yeah, I think Servando Carrasco is back. And, in fact, I thought that he, after a settling-in period, played very, very well for Orlando City. So he's a guy who's they're not going to be afraid to use him when Aguita's out or Sarin's out on international duty or due to suspension or, you know, red card or whatever. He's a guy who they're not afraid to play. And, you know, if they end up selling a Sarin or Aguita, you know, Carrasco could become a fixture in that midfield. He's 27 years old and... he's got some ability. He showed that several times. I thought he was the best player on the field in this Sporting Kansas City game. I think we're all probably going to agree on Breck Shea.
Definitely here. I think one of the reasons why Tally may be leaving to clear up cast space is because of Breck, and then, of course, us bringing out outside players. But Breck's going to be here.
Totally agree. I think Breck's back. He showed what he could do. We turned it around when he came back from injury. He's a solid core player that's not going anywhere.
Is Breck Shea back as a left wing or as a fullback?
Left wing for me.
I think he moves back to the fullback position, and I think Rivas is really going to step up next year.
Rivas or a brand new designated player. I'm hopeful. I'm a hopeful guy. Okay, Tyler Turner. I think we're all going to agree on this guy.
He's back, and he'll see time with both clubs.
I don't think he sees time with both clubs. I think they make him a solid OCB guy.
Yeah, I see him as a USL guy unless there is a rash of injuries. I don't expect him to be with the senior club much. He'll train with them, obviously, and he'll develop. He'll get some minutes. And under Anthony Pulis, he'll develop and get to be a better player.
Quick call, guys. I don't know if you remember that Ramos had 5 red cards last year. There's gonna be some times where we see Tyler Turner either on the bench or playing for Orlando City's senior team next year.
Did you say 5 red cards?
Yes.
That's not correct.
Yeah, he did not have.
How many red cards did he have last year?
Two, I believe.
Did he have 5 yellow cards, 2 red cards? That's what happened.
I think the club goes out and gets some fullback depth in the offseason. So I think Turner's going to stay at OCB. And last but not least, winter is coming. Or is he going?
Wow. Man. Up in the air, huh? Him and Kevin Molino. I think winter stays just because we don't know how Molino's coming back from injury. I think he'll be here.
I think winter stays too. He provides coverage. He has the ability to move inside if somebody goes down hurt. I think he was also feel like his number was fairly low too for a player of his caliber.
Yeah, I think he stays. As you mentioned, he's a versatile guy. But I think the other guy that's versatile is Kevin Molino, and I think if Kaká goes down and Molino could stay healthy, he moves to the middle and Winter starts on the right in his spot. So I see him staying. So there you have it. That took a long time, but there's your stays goes for the mainland staff. And feel free to mention in the comments if you vehemently agree or disagree with us. I'm sure you will. So, guys, I think that just about wraps it up for the November edition of the Mainland Podcast. I think that, you know, we're lucky to get an extra game. You know, we didn't make the playoffs, but we did get an extra game. And, you know, some of the teams that made the playoffs only got one extra game, and then they were out. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the postseason. So at least it was nice to get a game that we could feel good about, because we really didn't care if they lost all that much. It was like, yeah, we want them to win, but yeah, if they lose, so what? You know, it's a friendly. It's not a big deal. And, you know, of course, we got a lot of excitement ahead in the offseason. The first, you know, real build-up to the expansion season for the Orlando Pride. We'll have a lot more to probably to say about Orlando City B on our next broadcast in December as well, because, you know, things are going to start moving on that front as well. So, there you have it. And of course, we'll keep our eyes peeled for all of what's coming and going with the big club. And we probably would have talked more about the U.S. men's national team had Breck Shea played in either of these recent qualifiers, but he was not. He was on the bench and didn't get to play, so we didn't get to discuss the U.S., which might be a good thing after the last game.
Yeah.
On this 36th episode of the Mainland Podcast.
Not much to talk about that last game, so.
Nah. We could talk about how much rage I felt at Jossie Zardes. We could talk about that, but
that
would get old pretty quickly. I was raging pretty hard about, especially about the miss off the crossbar. But what are you going to do? It's a draw, and you know, the fact that people are happy with a road draw at Trinidad Tobago probably speaks quite a bit about where this team is now. So
if that's the state of U.S. soccer, the men's team, whenever you're okay with drawing with a Caribbean nation in CONCACAF away, then I don't know what to say. I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to get into that conversation and start Jurgen bashing over here.
Nah, well, I don't mind bashing a little Jurgen. I'm okay with it. But, you know,
it's technically a hate crime. You can't do that. It's a hate crime.
For me, CONCACAF is all about the U.S. and Mexico. You see what Mexico's doing, and you can see the U.S. is not currently keeping pace with them, and that's kind of troublesome. But I guess we'll probably get into that more as you know, in future episodes. Also, one thing I want to do is I want to have the guys from the Atlanta blog come on and talk a little bit about their, you know, their inaugural. You're getting ready for a team in Atlanta, and you know, I've already been on their podcast, talk a little bit about inaugural seasons and what supporter culture and that kind of thing. I mean, it might be interesting to have them on, so I'm going to reach out to them, and we'll also reach out to the club and see if we can get some exciting guests that are even more exciting than us, which is hard to believe, on the next edition of the Mainland Podcast. But I think we've babbled long enough, guys. So you know, on behalf of Daniel McGann and Andrew Harrison, our globe-trotting coverage guy who just got back from Rio, and boy, are his arms tired. I am Michael Citro saying, go City!